Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Locust Roundtable Podcast. Today we're here with the author Gail Carriger, who is the author of the ongoing series Parasol Protectorate, which is sort of a steampunk adventure romance comedy series. So Gail, if you'd say hi.
Hi there.
And we're also joined by Francesca Meinman, who is an editor at Locust Magazine. Fran?
Hi there, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. And let's see, so we'd been talking a little bit about the convention experience from different points of view, both having started out being, you know, I believe you guys said that you'd started out going to cons as fans.
Oh, yeah,
yes. We did.
We did. Years ago, I actually discovered BayCon and dragged Gail along with me the next year, like we mentioned
before.
Yeah,
Fran was the reason.
Yeah.
How old were we? When was that? Was that in high school or?
Oh my God, it makes me feel old, old. It was a really long time ago. I think it was.
Yeah.
Was it in the 90s? I think it was. It must have been in.
Yeah. I think it was in the early 90s, probably. So late high school, early college was our first convention going experience.
And you were.
And I remember.
You were violently ill like half the time, and you still had a great time. We said something good about the convention, I think.
Yeah, the first convention I ever went to, Fran dragged me there, and I had the stomach flu the whole time.
Oh, ouch.
And still managed to have a good time. I don't know how.
I know, and I still had such a good time that I went back to BayCon as every year after that, as diligently. I was at school in England for a couple years, and I flew back to go to BayCon. That was like, I didn't want to come back at Christmas time. I came back to go to BayCon instead.
I was devoted.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, BayCon has had a huge impact on us to begin with. And it is a regional con, but it's quite large for a regional con. I've been doing a lot of convention write-ups recently for Locust, and I realized that BayCon is up there. I mean, I think it had 1,500 to 2,000 people on average, and a lot of the other conventions I'm writing up are quite small in the, you know, 150
more
to 250
like
RealCon range. Yeah, or, you know, yeah. ReaderCon is like 700-ish, I think. World Horror is 430. I feel like World Fantasy was in the 1,000.
Yeah,
range.
World Fantasy usually caps around 1,000.
Yeah.
But
and
BaltaCon makes it up there.
2,000 people, so. BaltaCon, does it? I'm curious about BaltaCon. I've actually never been.
Yeah, I think it was up in the, at least it was over 1,000. It certainly felt like it, but that could have been me. I was having a great time, so it felt really busy. And
yeah, you've had a lot of BayCon positive stuff to say about BaltaCon recently, actually.
Oh, it's a great
time. You abandoned BayCon recently for BaltaCon.
I abandoned BayCon. And BayCon used to be bigger. I think a lot of the regional conventions did used to be larger back in the 90s. I mean, when we were first going, it got up as high as 5,000, and it's been kind of tapering off since then, but it's had sort of little mini resurgences, and I think some of the small cons suffer, you know, they'll lose members if they move or if they change the date that it happens, so, you know, there's always sort of growing pains with small conventions, and there's often sort of politics in the higher-ups of the people who run them as well, and so that can have a shakedown effect. Sometimes it's the rumor is that's what happened to BayCon recently. So,
and I do wonder, I mean, I feel like BayCon has some flexibility because it does also focus in on media, and I wonder if that's, I mean, it's not just literary, like ReaderCon or whatever, so it does have some crossover into costuming worlds, and I think it does.
It also happens on a weekend that conflicts with other conventions. It's on a three-day weekend. Was it Memorial Day weekend or Labor Day weekend?
Yeah.
I can't remember which.
Memorial Day.
And Phantom A is the same convention, it's the same weekend. So
that's growing.
There's a GamerCon the same weekend. So.
Oh, and WISCON is that weekend as well.
Yeah.
And you know what?
So
I actually may abandon BayCon for WISCON at some point because I'm longing to go to WISCON. As a feminist science fiction person, I feel I'm almost required to at some point. Give it a go, you know. So I've heard wonderful things about it. So
yeah, I have to admit, I regret that I've never made my way to WISCON. I have been to BayCon once, but I almost feel like those two cons. I mean, that's like the spectrum of cons right there.
Yeah, right.
Well, this is so kind of. This is something that happens a lot with small local conventions of the kind that, you know, Fran and I are talking about, where you end up with, if it's your convention, you know, it's a little bit like if you're a Doctor Who fan, having your doctor, you know, it's like you kind of own it, you get a little bit possessive about it. And all of you start dragging, at least what Fran and I did, is we start dragging all of our friends there and more friends there. So all of our friends go to BayCon now. It's like a big thing. Like, you know, we know half the people that are there now, either because we met them at BayCon and they always come back again, or we've dragged them there and now we're the reason we go. And I think
it's
for both of us...
interesting challenges for you now, though, as you make the transition.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, I can't really go.
Yeah.
Anymore, because, you know, I'm a professional, but that's part. I mean, the other thing is we now have all of these cons that in the past you and I would never consider going, but as we've become professionals and we started to go to all these other cons, we now to have a larger friendship group that sort of extends all over the world. Like, I know all of these authors now, and so do you from interviews and that kind of thing. And so we kind of feel almost safer going to other small conventions outside of our local network, because we know we've got friends that are going to go there as well. At least for me,
no,
that's part of it. I mean,
that's the wonderful thing about conventions is they're
so cool.
Yeah, I love that, and I love the fact that you meet people from all over the world, and they are your friends, even if you only see them once or twice a year. It's like a party that you let it drop,
yes,
and you pick it right back up again the next year. So
my friend Blake Charlton describes it as kind of returning to summer camp.
Yeah.
You know, like you only see them
that
once a year. But...
Will there be clay involved and pine cones?
But it's true. You walk into the bar at like World Fantasy, for example, and you know a whole bunch of people there, and it's just. It's so
true.
Much fun. I've started to choose conventions by who's going to be there. I know it's choosing to go.
I know what you mean. The International Conference for the Fantastic and the Arts is that con for me.
Uh-huh.
And I remember I walked in and to the hotel lobby one year and saw some people I recognized and went up to talk to them. And one of them said, you know, it's like a family reunion, but only with the family you like.
Exactly.
Now, Gail and I are both very much into this whole new idea of family and how you can construct it yourself and create your own extended network of friends who really are your family. So, no.
And it's invaluable in other ways for me. Like, speaking now as a professional writer rather than a fangirl anymore, like, it's not just that you're seeing these friends that you've built, but you're also seeing people who, for me, are going through the same process. So
yeah.
I have a whole network of authors that are kind of at the same point in their career that I am. They've been through similar contract processes, and, you know, they have similar problems not only with, like, writer's block and that kind of thing, but also with their editors or with their agents, or they have good stories or bad stories to tell. And so, you know, being a writer is so isolated most of the time, that, you know, having an opportunity to go somewhere where everyone else is going through the same sort of professional cycle as you, you know, like, I don't have a cubicle that I go into, I don't have a workspace I go into and coworkers. So it's also, these are my friends, but in a strange way, they're also my coworkers. So, mm-hmm. you know, to have an opportunity to connect with those people and talk about everything that's going on in a language that's our language. Like, I come out of academia, so, you know, in academia, everybody gets a sort of private language for their academic life. You know, as an archaeologist, like, I throw out all these terms with other archaeologists that I couldn't use in normal conversation. And it's kind of that with other writers. So you can go in and talk with other writers in a language that everybody knows about contract terms, about character profiles, and that kind of a thing. And conventions are really the only place for that.
No,
and similarly,
true. Unless you work at Locust, in which case,
yeah,
your
exactly.
day every day, which is a good thing about working there. You know?
Yes,
but,
yeah.
But no, I do feel that, and that you know, it is isolating to write. I mean, I think that's part of why writers like it. They can go,
yes, it's
and
a good
go
time.
Hide
good
out
time.
And make the world the
I
way
mean,
they want it.
And I think it's a valuable resource. I mean, I was talking with a handler at one point. Who sort of goes, she's one of those people who's hired by publishers and companies to pick up people from the airport and then take them to their events and make sure they get there on time kind of deal. So she deals with a lot of different authors in different genres. Mm. And I think we're particularly lucky in science fiction and fantasy because we do have all of these conventions and all of these convention opportunities. And authors in, say, the literary or, you know, the highfalutin nonfiction or memoir genres, they don't have these kind of conventions.
They don't have it. I mean, the romance readers have some of this sort of thing, but it's a totally different world. And, you know, I feel horror writers have a little bit of that, and the Horror Writers Association.
And the mystery writers do too. I mean, everybody has a little bit, but
nobody has it like SF in fantasy world at all.
No.
Yeah, our fandom
is motivated.
Yeah, and it's a loyalty as well, and that's one of the reasons why the field succeeds, I think. And it is. I don't know. Do you think it makes it easier on new writers? I don't know.
I feel really, really lucky that BayCon and WorldCon were kind of, I felt like they were modeling me as a debut author. I mean, it's a really strange way to, like, they were there for me. So when I happened to be attending BayCon well before I got published, when I was trying to get published desperately for all of those years, they were running all of these writer tracks about how to write a query letter and how to approach an editor and how to present yourself at conventions. And I went and I took diligent notes and I remember everything. And I did things like kind of study the behavior of authors on panels to see how I wanted to behave, you know, and to see the markers of how not to behave. And then when I started going to WorldCon kept having all of these things when I was, you know, the first couple of years as a writer, they kept having things like how to take tax deductions as a writer and how to negotiate your first contracts and how to, you know, and it was like they were doing it just for me. It was crazy. They were sort of following my career path. But I found that kind of thing totally invaluable. And that's quite apart from meeting all of the other authors who were like me trying to get published, who are now published authors, who are now all of these friends that I see at conventions. So, you know,
and I actually do feel that pros do, some people who are coming in from the opposite angle where they don't start out, you know, as young and hungry authors who haven't yet been published, they sometimes overlook the joys of the panel in favor of the bar.
Yeah.
And the bar is an absolutely wonderful gathering place, but I've always been a bit of a panel hog. I love going to those panels. And that's, I'm less and less able to because I'm working at the convention. Yeah. And I really miss them. I actually do.
And our friends used to mock us.
So much to be learned. What's that, then?
Our friends used to mock us. Our fellow, you and I have always been panel goers. I'll see. I mean, they book me solid, and I'm usually on a lot of panels now. But I will still try and sneak out and go to panels, particularly like hard science panels, or you know, something or even discussion panels that I haven't been booked on, but I'm interested in. You know, I'll still sneak out and go to them, but you and I always went to panels.
Well,
and
we're both perpetual students. We're academics. We want to learn, so, you know.
Maybe, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
But, yeah, there's BayCon has a whole collective of fans who go there who kind of take pride in never attending any panels.
They do, and I don't get that at all. I don't understand.
And I don't understand either. I love the panels.
Why do you even bother to attend? I don't understand. But, you know, it's just have a party. Don't pay to go to the convention.
There are a lot of pros now who do bar cons, who will go to conventions and not bother to pay to attend the convention, or, you know, the convention is sold out or whatever. So they're literally going to go and just hang out in the bar. And I think they find that very, very valuable. And I will say that now, you know, some 15 years later after my first conventions, I do spend most of my time at the
bar. Yeah, I do. I know. Same here. Either that or behind the locust table, depending on
you're always working.
Always running around
taking
photos.
A lot of cases where the panel comes to you at the locust table.
Yes. That's what I love about working the locust table at conventions. Is it's just a salon, you know, the craziest people will come up and sit behind your, you know, Robert Silverberg will come up and Terry Bisson will come up, or, you know, all these people. I mean, it just becomes this ongoing conversation. So it's a good thing.
The Tesla table is a little bit like that as well.
Mm. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit, Gail,
about the process of how conventions might have shaped you? You've built up a whole persona, and did the conventions help you? You were talking about learning behavior, both good and bad, from attending conventions. I know you built up this whole persona. Was that shaped at all by watching other people, or this very Victorian persona and very clear boundaries and?
Yeah. Well, that was part of the. Part of the reasons I did build up a persona was that, like, I was actually thinking about conventions and I was thinking about having to put myself out there in front of fans. And so far I've been very fortunate in that my particular fans, if you're a fan of my work, which are basically comedies of manners, in different contexts, then people tend to be quite, my fans tend to be quite mannered. I mean, sometimes you still get some, you know, awkwardness, you know, from the super geeks. But fortunately, I used to be a super geek, so I understand the awkwardness.
I mean, used to be, no.
Used to be, girl.
Yeah.
But I really like the persona. It's work for me. And so for me, putting on my, you know, I wear full makeup and I do my hair and, you know, I wear hats and I wear really, really nice clothing. And part of that helps me remind myself that this is a professional venue for me. So it's almost like putting on a suit when you go to work at a bank. You know, it just reminds me that I do have to, you know, be on my guard to a certain degree. You know, I have to stay polite because, you know, I'm around fans and I'm around fellow authors and I'm around editors and I'm around agents. And so it is my business world and I need to remember to treat it like that. And I'm very vested in surface appearance. I'm a shallow person. So, attending to that appearance helps remind me of that. And I often recommend to fans who want to become professional writers that they consider that when they're going to a convention and considering approaching editors and agents, that they really should think about how they present themselves, not only for what kind of impression they're going to make on other people, but also for how they will behave. You know, I think if you're dressed super casually, then you're going to behave super casually. And the convention environment is one that encourages that. And if you're going there just to enjoy yourself and just to be a fan, then that's absolutely fine. But if you are, you know, trying to break in, then just changing a little bit of how you dress can really help remind you that you should behave in a slightly more professional manner.
So, that's an interesting perspective.
Although, you know, track me down after a couple of takes and see what I say.
Yeah, right. Now, I remember when we were traveling in Australia together and you were ambushed, at a place that will remain unnamed, and it actually really threw you. You were asked to do a signing on the fly, and I've never seen you
really
so thrown. It was like you had forgotten your armor or something.
Yeah, it really did. That's an interesting thing to bring up. Yeah, you know, we won't name names, but
names.
It taught me a lesson, which is I never tell any of my publishing houses if I travel or where I'm going if I'm not going professionally. So, you know, for example, I'm going to Germany for the Frankfurt Book Expo, but I'm also going to be in Germany after that for a while on vacation, and I'm just saying, you know, I'm sorry, I'm on vacation.
Right, no, that's good.
No, I cannot go anywhere and find stock. And that's because, you know, I thought, and it was a miscommunication, but I thought I had said, you know, yeah, I'm happy to stop in while I'm traveling through Australia and sign stock, but I don't want any events. I don't want to meet anybody because that is I want to present properly if that's the case. And I didn't want to have to carry all of my luggage around with me and stuff and all these, you know, fancy outfits.
Gail's so, and then they're quite impressive.
Yeah. And then
anyone follows
one,
the blog,
one
you
summer.
Don't, you should. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there was just a miscommunication. And so they, you know, cause I'd been very clear that I didn't even state times when I was going places. So I'd say, you know, I will show up at some point this day and sign your stock for you. But I very carefully never said, you know, I'll be there at 2 or anything like that because I wanted it clear that, you know, that they couldn't arrange anything. And of course, one of the stores.
And there were people there.
And there were people waiting for me.
They were waiting for you. And some of them were in steampunk costume, which was very cute.
I know. And I was, of course, not dressed up at all. And I was really unprepared for it. And I was there with
family. You're not dressed up at all is still pretty dressed up to most people.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's
still
true.
That was the thing. You knew that it wasn't right. Others didn't really know, but you needed to build up that it was an acting thing, you know?
Exactly. And it has had this sort of reverse side effect now, which is, if I'm not, you know, dressed and making the effort and something, somebody recognizes me, or I'm pounced upon by a fan, or, you know, like I sneak in to sign at Borderlands and nobody knows who I really am, you know, or something like that. And somebody recognizes me and identifies me, it messes with my head in a very strange way. And that is a side effect of having kind of a persona that I never expected. You know, like, I'm like, oh, wait, what do I do? How do I don't have the conversation in place. Like, it's almost like I can't even talk without knowing which persona I'm supposed to be talking as. It's kind of crazy.
So funny. I mean, I know there are other authors, a couple in the romance genre as well, that have have these personas that they use. And I mean, heck, Walt Whitman did it. So
yeah.
the whole beard, and I mean, he decided, made a conscious choice to adopt a persona.
Yeah,
and I actually think it's very powerful.
And there are writers who do that. Like, I have writer friends who, you know, like, have, they don't, you know, necessarily have a pseudonym or a pen name or anything like that, but they do certainly have, like, convention gear. Like, they like to be recognized at conventions, so
right.
They'll wear a specific hat. Like, Merle Lafferty always wears a red fedora, for example.
Or Terry Pratchett in a hat, or
yeah,
Neil Gaiman
or
and his inimitable, you know, black leather. You know?
Yeah, or Terry Pratchett, and he wears, like, a black fedora kind of thing. You know, like, they'll have something that... It's kind of an article of clothing that they put on, you know, in the case of one of my friends, it's like a suit jacket. So he'll just wear like a nice t-shirt and jeans, but he'll wear a little blazer over the top. And that's kind of just, you know, it's like a little trigger, a little reminder, you know, that I'm meeting people here and I need to remember to behave myself. You know, it's to me, it's almost like I really love wearing high heels. And I'm almost always wearing stilettos if you see me at a convention. And part of that is
I will just say
posture.
That watching you wear those stilettos and get them, it's painful for me. I will just say that. You would not believe the pain that she endures. Once we were at a convention, I forget which one it was. They're all starting to blend together.
Denver.
Denver. The party hotel was far away.
It was Denver. Oh my God! And I learned my lesson at Denver. My Denver WorldCon, which was a great WorldCon, but they have this massive convention center, and our convention was all the way at the end of it. And then the party hotel, which of course is where most people end up most of the time, was like 6 blocks away. So you were literally walking a mile. I swear it was at least a mile between the party hotel and the convention center, and it was hot. And, you know, it's a little bit hilly, and I just did not...
Blisters.
I hadn't learned.
Oh, my God.
I just hadn't learned, and I had blisters.
Yeah.
And luckily, Fran was with me, and she had all sorts of blister protection.
I have a medical bag, yeah.
And I just
have a, you know, pharmacopoeia that I carry around with me, basically, for other people. But
I've learned, and my lesson for that is that I have flaps now, the little portable flaps that fold up and fit into all of my bags, and I carry a bag big enough to hold my flaps.
They're comfortable.
And so I walk in flats and put on the stilettos.
Yeah, cons like that make me glad that my normal con-going outfit involves hiking boots.
That's a very good plan, as far as I'm concerned.
I was
really long skirt, so no one could see my
brand
new anyway.
Your
so.
Yeah,
so I can wear the most sensible shoes.
Yeah. Everyone says wear practical shoes, but I can't. Like, I'm just
she
not
can't
ready.
Do it.
I can't do it. I'm
not ready.
I love how you're saying
you're not ready. That's pretty funny.
I'm not ready to go to practical shoes yet. I can't.
Okay, well, take it back. Maybe I'll get there.
I have started to vote on hotels and locations for future WorldCon.
Uh-huh.
By going up to the bid committee and finding out if the hotel and the party hotel and the stay hotel, the room block hotel and the convention center are attached or not. And if they're not attached, I won't vote for them.
Really? That's pretty cute.
Really? I'm like, talk to me about the hotel arrangement.
I am unsurprised. Only you.
So Fran, there's something I wanted to ask you, because you have to spend so much time in the dealer's room now. Speaking of,
I do.
People who have to, you know, always present professionally, because, you know, whenever you're at a con, you're representing Locus Magazine. And I was particularly wondering, because I've spent some time behind the table myself, and when it comes to, there are lots of rules out there on the internet for fans who are interacting with authors.
Right.
But I feel like there's a little less guidance sometimes for the expectations that we have when fans are interacting with the dealers in the dealer room. And I was wondering if there was anything, any sort of advice you'd like to put out there to the fan community about, interacting with
about
the
how
people
to interact.
Who are trapped behind tables at the dealer room.
Well, the first thing I'd like to say, and this goes for everyone, is I would like to really pimp an Emily Post concept, if you can put those three words together in the same sentence, which is, when you introduce yourself, say your full name. It's just a common courtesy thing. A lot of people will assume, and I always do this, and this is when I'm talking to professionals, to dealers, to anyone, I just say, hello, my name is Francesca Myman. And it's so lovely, it greases everything, because then they can remember, they don't have to pretend that they remember your name, they don't have to, you know, come up with... It's really very helpful. So,
and do it again
whenever you meet somebody.
Yeah.
And do it again, you know. Don't assume people will remember you. Even if you are wearing that memorable piece of clothing or whatever, don't assume that they know who you are. And it's basic rules of common courtesy, you know.
It holds true for authors, too.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I always try, and I'm pretty darn memorable because how many...
You've got a pretty memorable persona.
Authors are out there. But I always try and say my whole name when I introduce myself to people, even if I remember them, which most of the time I don't. I have a terrible memory. Because, you're right. Like, it's just, you know, it's hard. Sometimes the badge name isn't in the right place, or it isn't big enough, or you don't want to be squinting at somebody's chest, you know? Like,
right. So, and so the whole badge check thing is so embarrassing, and it can be avoided.
Yes. Yeah.
No, it's true. And, you know, honestly, if somebody comes up and they're not wearing a badge and they introduce themselves and it's an author's name, somebody I'm very interested in or whatever, that's fantastic. Then I go and I take a picture of them for Locus and ends up showing in the magazine. I mean, it helps to know who people are and it helps to have those basic common rules of courtesy. I wouldn't say there's any particular set of different rules for approaching people in the dealer's room. I do think that you can get a little trapped behind the dealer's table because you got to be there. So if somebody comes up and they want to explain absolutely everything about the theory of the universe to you, you kind of can't get away for a little while. So it's really good to be checking on whatever signals you're getting. And with dealers, sometimes you're trying to process the information coming at you from seven different people, and that one person wants to stand and talk. And I love people. I mean, I know not everyone that goes to conventions actually does. We have a lot of people who are sort of a little on the antisocial side, but I like talking to people. But it's all about the dynamic, and it's all about paying attention to the details in the interaction, somebody's body language, that sort of thing. Attention must be paid. So that's really all I can say about how to behave.
I guess
really pay attention to the other person, you know.
I guess one thing I noticed particularly, because Locus tends to have a smaller table compared to, say, you know, Larry Smith, the bookseller, where there can be 20
right.
people around his stall at any given time. Because Locus tends to have a smaller table, I feel like if there's one person talking to the people behind the table, a lot of times another person who might be interested in either having a conversation or asking a question will kind of think to themselves, oh, they're busy, I'll come back later.
Oh, no. I mean, no. And I do think people are more timid than they need to be. I'm a big fan of putting yourself out there.
Right.
So if anyone who looks at the long skirts can probably see. I don't think you're going to get anywhere in this world if you don't put yourself out there. You should do it in a respectful way. But absolutely come up and introduce yourself if you have a question. Be courteous, you know, pay attention to signals. But don't feel like you have to. This is a community. This is not, you know, a hierarchy in quite the same way. I don't want it. Maybe it is, but I don't want it to be. I don't want there to be the gods and then the peons, you know.
Right.
Like people, if there's a really great author that you're talking to, I hope fans still feel confident to, you know, at least come up and say, you know, oh, I love your work, or I have a question, or you're trapped behind the Locus table, and I thought I would come get your autograph, or you know, something like that. Maybe that's bad. I don't know. I shouldn't be encouraging this, but. But no.
One of the advantages of smaller conventions is that the authors are milling about out there, and they're out and around, mm-hmm. and they're not, you know, the larger conventions like WorldCon, at least for me, or World Fantasy, authors tend to get into little groups of gaggles of other authors and have intense conversations, and so fans don't feel like right about interrupting them, or authors will hide out in the green room because there's just too many fans out on the floor. But if it's a smaller convention, we'll wander out and around and mill with people, and so, you know, and have and go down and hunt out the Locust dealer table to have a conversation, you know.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Then it's like totally acceptable to come up and, and introduce yourself politely and say, you know, or to the Locusites or to the Locus editors, and like you can go up and be like,
people.
I mean, I would love to see an interview with so and so.
Yeah, we love talking about this stuff. Feedback is how we know what we're doing wrong, what we're doing right, you know. I mean, you know, we maybe don't come up with, like, you know, a 1-hour tirade of what we're doing wrong because it might be a little sad for us, but, you know, we've had that once or twice. But we really do want to know, and it's a pleasure to interact with people who read Locus. It's such a, you know, a rarefied market at this point. It's really the fans that are dedicated fans that read, you know, in professionals and writers that are loyal fans, and you know, in this particular marketing climate right now, I think that's what's keeping us afloat, is that we do have such a specialized market of very loyal people, and if we don't hear from them, it's no fun. So, yeah.
Well, it is fun to hear the people come up and go, oh, I remember when I picked up my first Locus at the Worldcon in, you know, LA.
I love that. It makes me feel really, really young when they do that. Well, I remember when it was a mimeograph edition. Oh my god, I don't know if I was born then, but that's great. It certainly makes you feel like part of a wonderful tradition, which is the joy of working there, is that you're part of the field. You get to be part of the tradition of the field. So that's a very good
another thing to consider, just from a dealer's room perspective, and Fran, this might not quite apply to you because you're working a, you know, like a subscription, sort of different, slightly different deal. But I've worked the dealer's room from the other side at different kinds of conventions and events. And I mean, the other thing to remember is if you're sort of waiting patiently and the dealer is having a conversation for something and you want to buy something, you know, that is their reason for being there. So by all means, like, wave your money around and be like, can I pay for this? I've got to get to a panel, you know, because the dealers have paid out for their space in the dealer's room, and they need to make, you know, if nothing else, their money back for that space. So, you know, like they really need to sell their wares. And the other thing to remember, which is like an underhanded thing, this is from when I used to work the Renaissance Fair circuit, and I don't know how many dealers in conventions tend to do this, but there's often discounts for certain things. Like, I know my particular booth used to give a military discount, so of 10%. So, I mean, so it's also worth asking those kinds of questions when you're in the dealer's room. You know, if you happen to be a member of the service, you can be like, hey, do you guys have a military discount? Because often they will. So,
oh, cool.
That's my dealer tip.
That's one I hadn't heard. No. I don't think we offer one of those, but sometimes things do get discounted towards the end of the convention. You might lose the thing that you're looking for, but I shouldn't even tell anyone about that.
No. That's a terrible trick, but it is one. I mean,
no one wants to ship stuff home.
Yeah. There's always this sort of balance between waiting to see if the item you really want is going to go on sale or it's going to get bought. You know?
Right, so, exactly.
Like, huh.
And that often happens. These days we have a couple of very dedicated, we bring, you know, some galleys and books with us at times for sale from Charles's collection, Charles N. Brown's collection, to raise money for Locus. And we have a couple of dedicated buyers who swoop in on the Locus table, like sometimes even before it really opens, because some of them are dealers. And it's like piranhas. It's kind of funny. They're like, they, you know, I'm still unloading the books, and they're looking through them, and half the stock is, you know, gone in the first day. So there is the element of, if you want it, if you really, really want it, you should snap it up. But if money is an issue, a dealer is going to be much more likely to be willing to take those $5 or $10 off later, you know.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, not necessarily true of Locus, but it's true of many, many, many tables. It's a good thing. And I also have worked the Ren Faire Circus, and I also have done some conventions for Locus where I'll sell some of my own jewelry, and half the table will be for Locus. And that's always an interesting balance for me, and very challenging, because it's became personas. It's two slightly different personas for me, and I'll have two very different sets of people coming by, and that's actually the benefit of it, is that people that wouldn't look at Locus get to hear about it, and people that come for to look at the jewelry and the pretty shiny things end up walking away with an issue of Locus, and vice versa. So it's good, but it's also a little rough because I was doing this at a Nova Albion steampunk convention, which, by the way, I really enjoy. I think these themed conventions have a good future, especially the steampunk ones are really, really just so much fun. The people come, almost everyone that shows up gets into the spirit of things and gets dressed up, and the discussion level is very high and that sort of thing. But yeah, I was selling both my own things and stuff for Locus, and whoa, was I tired. That way. So, it was tiring, but particularly in that instance, it was nice when people were aware of when the sellers were stepping in and were willing to step aside for a moment to let me finish a transaction, that sort of thing. Because dealers do want to talk to you, but I mean, they're also being paid to sell or selling their own stuff, so on. So it's a fun thing to do, but you gotta be willing to throw a lot of energy at it, and it's good to have helpers who come by and check you out for breaks and that sort of thing. So, and Karen's very good at that sort of thing, aren't you, Karen? You're one of the locals, so you're great about that. We love having you around. You spot us for breaks so that we can actually, you know, stretch our legs and that sort of thing.
I still remember I did that for Amelia, like the first day I met all of you guys.
Oh my God, how funny.
Training or anything like that, but yeah, I'd been talking with her and Gary behind the table, like, and this was my first time behind the table. I was like, oh my God. And then she was like, oh, hey, I'm going to go get a drink. Could you look after things for a sec? And I
oh no, I didn't realize it got thrown on you that way. That's funny.
I was like, okay. And
here, look after everything. Oh God, what do I do?
But the funny thing was, I had actually, you know, in the time we'd been talking, I'd been observing, like, her system for doing things, so I was able to just slot in pretty naturally. I was kind of surprised at how smoothly that went. Now I actually enjoy working the Locus table.
That's good. That's good to hear. You know, a lot of people do, and we actually do have helpers that have come by and just have volunteered to stop by because of the fact that you do get to meet people, and it's kind of fun, you know, honestly. It's
I'm going
to
see. Shout out for the Cephalo table, too, because it's a similar mm-hmm. experience. And I know,
oh, yeah.
Fran,
oh, yeah.
You and I, we both joined Cephalo earlier on when we had sold just short stories. And, you know, one of the places that, you know, when we were real newbie writers and really early on to the community and just kind of breaking in, one of the places that we really got to meet and talk to fellow authors who were way more established for the very first time, kind of one-to-one, was behind the Cephalo booth.
Oh, absolutely. And, so, and also Cephalo parties and the Cephalo
booth. Oh, yeah, those were great.
So,
and they're always hurting for volunteers. So if you are a Cephalo member and, mm-hmm. you know, you have that opportunity, I always suggest taking advantage of that.
By the way, let me break in and pipe up for just volunteering at cons in general.
Yes.
I mean, honestly, for one, cons, you know, the lifeblood of cons. Cons would not happen without volunteers. And for two, it is a fantastic way to meet people, especially if you're new to a convention.
No, it's really true. I mean, we rely
on... And you get in with the
small volunteer spirit. Yeah. You get in, you get... Often, you know, you'll get something, like you'll get to go to the convention for free. So a lot of people that don't have enough money, they end up being, you know, gophers and so on, and helping to run... I have quite a few friends who love being gophers, so.
Yeah, we know a quite collection of people who actually now, you know, they started out just going to the convention, and they now actually just prefer to volunteer because, you know, they kind of feel like they've sort of been there, done that with a lot of the panels, and they've met, especially with the smaller conventions, they've met a lot of the guests, and so they're kind of like, yeah, it gives me something to do, and I have, you know, some responsibility, and I feel like I have purpose while I'm there, and I still get to see everybody and meet people, and most conventions are really good about making sure that the volunteers have time off and that they're fed and, you know, all that kind of a thing. So it can be a really great way to meet people and get involved. And you have to be careful. You'll get sucked in for the rest of your life.
That's what I was just going to say. That's it for you. You know, you volunteer at a few conventions and boom, you're running a con. And how did that happen? I don't know. But that's what happens. But definitely.
So there are all these different flavors of conventions, from the media heavy to the literary heavy to, you know, the kind of Worldcon where you've got a little bit of everything. What do you guys find most valuable when you're choosing which cons to go to?
Ooh. Brand, you want to start?
No.
Well, sure,
actually. I will. I would like to throw in a word while we're busy giving shout-outs. I would like to throw in a word for the small con. I do feel that a lot of people, as they get more and more professional, they go to Worldcon, they go to World Fantasy, they go to ReaderCon, they might go to ICFA, and there are a couple other conventions that they might go to. I'm really supporting things like Potlatch. I'm supporting things like FogCon, which is the inaugural FogCon, was held in San Francisco in 2011, small. But I hear, you know, very, very intellectual, very interesting stuff going on there. I feel like there's a lot of value still to be had at the regional cons. And if you're hard up for money, you know, and you can't afford to fly out to Australia for a Worldcon, go ahead, start out with those new conventions. If you have any interest in steampunk at all, please take a look at conventions. You know, just go hunt steampunk and convention in Google, and you will find that a large number of conventions are proliferating around this country. So much fun, because the steampunk community is a maker community as well, and so you get some really remarkable art exhibits and that sort of thing.
And the costumes are intense. Steampunk conventions are costume conventions. They're 90% or more people are in costume. Like, that's, I've never been to any kind of conventions like that before, outside of, you know, say the Renaissance Fair or the Dickens Fair or something. Like, it's really costume heavy. But people are, I think people at steampunk conventions really take on the spirit of their time period as well. So people, at least to me and in my experience, have been really gracious and really polite, and, you know, the gentlemen tip their hats, and you pass the most amazing conversations in the hallway, you know, from distressing leather to, you know, the ramifications of Proust. You know, like, you never know what you're going to hear.
Sociopolitical problems of representation and colonialism and steampunk and so on. All
They're really remarkable.
Things. Remarkable, high-level things going on.
And that's one of the growing conventions. Like, steampunks are more and more sprouting, and everywhere that there is one that's reoccurring, it's getting bigger each year. The other sort of difference with steampunk and some of the other conventions, in my experience, is that it has more of an age range at steampunk conventions, and
that's
far more and more of a gender
that,
parity.
Yeah,
there's also a really good. I don't know how to put this without sounding non-PC, but there's an equal representation of men and women at most steampunk conventions.
This is very true. Which is not, unfortunately, still not quite the case in other areas.
Yeah, regular conventions. Yeah.
Although, just piping up.
And
for
the
a
guys
moment.
Dress up. The guys dress up. Oh my God.
And the guys who are dressed up, they all look fabulous.
They look amazing in their top hats and their vests.
And you'll pass, like, a 72-year-old gentleman talking to, you know, a young teenager in the hallway about the merits of top hats. You know, it's just fabulous. So, are you, Fran, do you feel like you're finished with your variety of conventions?
Absolutely, go for it. Go.
Okay, so Fran's talked about small cons, and I agree with her, although, you know, like, to defend my species, the writer beast, there comes a point with us where, you know, like, I get flown to a certain number of conventions because I'm a guest of honor, or, you know, I'm on the docket, and so, you know, they fly me out, and then I, you know, I have only a certain amount of money to spend on flying myself to certain conventions. And so most of, you know, we do tend to, you'll get the biggest name writers if you're a fan who's interested in writers, or if you're a person who's trying to break into the writing business. Sadly, you will get the most of them at, like, World Fantasy and WorldCon, because we tend to spend the money to fly ourselves there, because our editor is there and our agent is there, and we can, you know, deal business and pleasure in the same fell swoop. So unfortunately, but on the flip side, we are all dealing with business and agents and fellow authors while we're at those kinds of conventions. And so at a WorldCon, for example, I'm almost never on the floor. I'm always on a panel or in the green room or in the con suite. You know, like, I'm never really open to talking and chatting to people all that much. Whereas at a smaller convention, if I'm there, I'm much more open to talking to fans. So on the, you know, sort of in favor of small cons, you do get more one-to-one contact with people. And then the convention that we haven't really talked about is, like, the really large conventions like Comic-Con. And I don't know. I've never been to one, and I'm hoping to avoid
I've
it.
I've talked to people who have, and it sounds horrifying. I have to say, it sounds like the worst possible thing.
I've been
complete cattle call.
I've been to Comic-Con twice, and that was back before it started hitting its limit, you know, 2 months out. And I wouldn't necessarily go back. I have to admit, WorldCon or smaller is more my speed. 150,000 people, even in a huge convention hall, is brutally overwhelming.
It terrifies me.
It's true.
Although I've heard good things about DragonCon. DragonCon's also huge compared to a WorldCon. It's like 40,000 people. But that doesn't sound...
I hear it's modular.
Yeah. That doesn't sound as bad as Comic-Con.
Yeah. And I hear you kind of, like, hang out in sort of specific areas of the convention center and in sort of specific hotels. You know, like, so the writers are over here and the podcasts are over here, and, you know, they kind of keep everybody sort of in their little club. So it feels like you're sort of at a small convention in a bigger convention. but that's one that's sort of kind of on my radar, but I'm really kind of terrified of the large comic conventions. I feel like that's so
often held up as almost the goal for WorldCon is to become that big. I don't know that that's really, I mean, kind of thinking of it just now, perhaps that shouldn't be the goal. I mean, we're always talking about how to expand, and I do think it's good for us to expand. We need to expand, but maybe not quite that much. I don't know.
The nice thing is, as long as WorldCon travels from year to year, it's never in the same place, you know, 2 years in a row, I don't think it can be as big as Atlanta or San Diego.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. It's never going to accumulate that loyal following from a particular area. But it's also true, though, and this is something that was talked about, I think, at the last WorldCon I was at, that media conventions are doing a much better job of drawing in people of both genders equally, and of also bringing in a lot more people of color than. And I don't know what it is that they're doing. That's better, but we should look into it. I think there might even be some more program. It's just something to do with the way they advertise, or I don't know. But there's a lot of work to be done on that front with conventions. And I do support the larger conventions. I don't mean to imply that I don't love them. But I actually got into this very interesting conversation with artist John Baggio at the last BayCon about how some of these conventions seem to be fading away and how that was sad. We don't want them to fade away. We actually would like to see the organizations like BayCon succeed in years to come. So, and that is an expansion project to a certain extent, trying to bring in more people. And I don't know how we can do that. It's certainly, there are more people who are aware of science fiction now and who read now than there ever were, you know, 20 years ago. And part of that is due to media, but why can't we capitalize on that? They're out there. You know? Are they afraid of us? I don't know. Maybe they should be. But go on, Gail. You were expounding your theory of.
That was pretty much it. Like, it kind of that's sort of how I kind of divide all conventions in my head into sort of these different categories. So, you know, small con, World Fantasy, and World Con, and then Big Con, and then steampunk conventions. So I kind of, for me, I have to. I burned out on conventions last year, and it was a rough lesson, but I think I needed to learn it, and luckily I learned it right at the beginning of my career. And so I another thing, if you do get into conventions, is to be careful not to do too many. I mean, there are some people out there like Chris Garcia who, I swear to God, go to every convention possible.
How does he do it? How does he do it?
Goes to conventions. I have no idea. His whole life is going to conventions. And there are people who, there are real, honest-to-goodness convention devotees who, like, that's what they do. They save up all their money. They use all their vacation, and what they do is go to conventions. And, you know, and they're like the hardcore readers. You know, they're like the readers who read 50 books a week. You know, there are convention goers like that. But I had to learn that I couldn't do that, and that so I limit myself to only one a month, and that not only sort of three quarters of the year. So I'm down to 9 conventions a year or thereabouts.
That sounds very sane, my dear. I was getting a little worried for you.
So I go down to those to a fewer number of conventions, and then I try and be kind of pick and choose within those categories. So I try and do a bigger convention like Worldcon or World Fantasy. And then I try and do a couple of steampunk conventions and a couple of small conventions, and that's kind of... And then, you know, I usually throw in one convention that I just really love and try and go to, and so that's like Balticon, which I really must say is an awesome convention. If you happen to be on the East Coast within driving distance of Balticon, you should probably go, because it's a great convention. It's a small convention that just happens to have become the podcasters' convention. Like, it just happened. So it's like the Mecca for podcasters. So all the podcasters try and make it out to Balticon at least once every other year. And so it has a great podcasting social media track at this one tiny little convention in Baltimore.
Cool.
So
have you been there?
I highly recommend that.
No.
Sounds like you might need to go.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. They have all sorts of panels on, like, you know, crazy technological audiophile mumbo jumbo that I completely have nothing to do with, because I'm a fan of podcasting, so I just go there to kind of meet all the people I'm big fans of. So that's why I had so much fun, I think. But so that's like one of those conventions. It's a small convention that I try to go to if at all possible. Just like Nova Albion is another one, which is our local steampunk convention, and BayCon, which is our local. You know, like, so there is a sort of, I sort of have another little list in my head of the ones that, you know, not necessarily, to be brutally honest, are going to be like great career boosters, and I'm not going to be meeting with my agent or my editor or anything like that, but I know I'm going to have a great time. And, you know, and there is that part of me that used to go to conventions just for the fun of it, and that used to just be a fangirl. And, you know, if I can resurrect that part of me even a little bit, then I feel like I won't burn out as quickly. I think, you know, if you're choosing to go, if you're trying to decide whether to go to a convention for the first time or which ones, you kind of have to weigh what you want from the convention and what kind of experience you're after, and then, you know, kind of do your research and pick and choose and talk to your friends who've been to them, or, you know, listen to podcasts about conventions and see which ones you want to go to.
That makes sense. Well, we've just about hit our hour here. And I wanted to thank you guys both so much for coming on. The traditional ending of the Locus Roundtable is to give both of you a chance to talk about any projects that you've got ongoing or anything you want the public to be aware of. So, Fran, did you want to go first?
Oh, goodness. Yes, Locus is very much looking forward to attending renovation. Charles N. Brown was the guest of honor. Obviously, he won't be coming.
He won't be showing up.
They haven't actually named him as a ghost of honor, but he's still the guest of honor, I believe. And there will be events at renovation related to that. And we're also, of course, always eager to point out that Locus is now a nonprofit, is now run by Locus Science Fiction Foundation, and we're going to be, I'm hoping that we will be doing some sort of fundraising projects for the Locus Science Fiction Foundation at renovation, I will also be having a table there, and please feel welcome to stop by and say hello.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Karen.
And Gail?
Let me see, fourth book in the Parasol Protectorate series, the fourth book is Heartless, just came out last month, And so that's available anywhere you'd like to buy a book. And let me see, I have a bunch of things coming out the beginning of next year. I have a manga in the works of the first book, and I have a new young adult series that's going to be starting up at the beginning of next year, and the last book in the Parasol Protector series. So if you are one of those readers who wants to know that the series is going to finish, the series is going to finish. It's going to be a 5-book series, and that will be it. So you can start reading them now because you won't be trapped into a forever series. So, yeah, I think that's it at the moment. And I am going to be at the Reno Worldcon. I am super excited about it. They have tapped into my alter ego, and so I will be doing an archaeological presentation on their Thursday night, their art night. So I'm going to be doing a presentation all about what it's like to be a real-world archaeologist, and I'm a scientific archaeologist, so I'll be talking about analyzing artifacts and sort of the artistic side of archaeology. So that's going to be really fun, and I have a coffee clutch, and I think I have a reading or a signing. And I'm on a couple of panels, so and the rest of the time I'll be at the bar because that's what I do. Well, possibly the green room, or possibly the sapphire table, or possibly hanging out at the Locust booth. But
exactly.
So I'm going to be there, and then I think I'm going to Frankfurt for the Book Expo, which probably most fans won't be at, but I'm going to be there, and then I'm going to TeslaCon, which is in Wisconsin, and which is their little steampunk convention, which I've not been to before, so I'm really excited about that. So, speaking of conventions, that's the rest of my convention year.
Wow. Okay, great. Well,
busy lady.
I wanted to thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you
for having me. Thank you so much, Karen. It was very, very fun.